Housing Authority of the City of Austin, the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, and the Austin Affordable PFC, Inc.
Commissioner Duncan Hall?
Present.
Commissioner Carrington?
Present.
Commissioner Apostolo?
Present.
Great. And Commissioner Apostolo, can you hear okay?
Yes.
Great. And Commissioner Bailey?
Here.
And Commissioner Bailey is serving as our acting chair today, and Chairman Ritchie sends his regrets that he is unable to make today's meeting. So we have the HACA, AAHC, and Austin Affordable PFC agendas all open. In Commissioner Apostolo's absence, I would suggest that Commissioner Carrington, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Please stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the first item is public comment, and we do have a couple of folks who are here to speak to the board. Lauren DePena, who's a resident at Chalmers Court South, want to come on forward and feel free to have a seat, and you've got 3 minutes and press the button down to turn green.
Hello, my name is Lauren Pena. I'm a resident of Chalmers South. I'd like to begin by expressing my gratitude towards HACA. I was on the waiting list for 10 years, homeless with four children. In 2020, I came up as a public housing recipient. And since then, I am proud to say that I have my paralegal certification from the University of Texas, and in 5 weeks, I will be a first-generation college graduate. Thank you. Additionally, I was appointed to the Downtown Austin Community Court Advisory Board by Mackenzie Kelly and the Austin Public Safety Commission by Jose Velasquez. And I originally came here today because I was hoping to request the establishment of a housing recipient member on your board. And I did learn that there is someone currently that is a recipient on your board. However, I would like to bring to the attention that that doesn't necessarily accurately reflect the community and the issues that we're going through at this generation and, you know, as younger families and things like that. There is a significant disconnect within the goals that you guys have, and they're great goals, and like me, you've helped me so much, but I do see that there is a significant need for change in different places where someone like me, it doesn't have to be me, but I would like to see that there be someone on the board that does represent younger families actually going through these programs. Additionally, I believe it would be beneficial to have someone that has experience with some of the educational opportunities you guys are providing. Again, you guys are doing it out of the best of your heart, but there is a disconnect there, and they could be a lot more efficient. And overall, my goal is to, you know, have other residents have a success story like mine. I plan on attending UT Law next year, fingers crossed. With that, I want to open a nonprofit law firm on the east side, as well as a community resource center. And there's just a disconnect that I really hope the board might take into consideration, either opening up another position or ensuring that the resident member that's there to represent you actually has experience with the generation that's going on currently. Thank you. And I can take any questions if you have any questions.
Any questions? Any questions? You're going to get rid of all those baby boomers, huh?
No, no, sir. Well, I need the baby boomers because I need your guidance. What I'm trying to do with my community, I can only learn from you.
I understand.
Yes, sir.
It's a good point.
Thank you, sir.
No, thanks for your insight today. I would just by way of information, we're thrilled to have, of course, Commissioner Apostolo, who serves on our
board. You're
doing
a wonderful job, and I appreciate it. I just think that we need to accurately reflect the community now.
Sure. So a couple things. One, I would encourage you to talk to Lupe Garcia, is in the back of the room. She heads up the citywide advisory board, which is the presidents and vice presidents of all the properties. And they give voice, and there's a lot of folks from every generation and every walk of life at HACA that help to shape policies and programs. So that might be a really important connection for you to make. So I hope you get to meet Lupe before you leave. The other thing is that on appointments, so appointments are actually made by city council to this board. So the mayor makes the appointments to the board. So the ability of the board to help you might be somewhat limited. So just a...
I understand. I'll reach out to him.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate your help.
Yep.
We have two other speakers who are here, but Greg and Brad, do you guys want to talk now, or do you want to... We'll wait. We'll save it for the item. Is there anyone else from the public wishing to make comment? Great. Well, we've got a couple minutes here at the beginning. I'd like to do a couple things. As many of you know, we've had a little bit of change happening at HACA. Lisa Garcia has shared that after 30 years of service at HACA, she's going to be leaving at the end of October, so we'll have a little bit of time to tell her goodbye. She's going to take over as the Chief Operating Officer at the Corpus Christi Housing Authority, which is super exciting and worthy of a round of applause. As Lisa departs, I've asked Laura Bodai to step up as our new director of our new vice president of assisted housing. So Laura's stepping into those shoes. We do one vice president at a time here. So Lisa remains vice president until she leaves, but Laura is actively training and getting ready to, you know, step up into that new role from her current role at admissions. So Laura, would you like to share maybe just a quick hello to the board and maybe just share a little bit about your background? And then I'll ask Brittley to come on up as well.
Hi, everybody. Yes, my name is Laura Bodai. I've been an admissions director for almost 9 years. I've been at the agency for almost 15. I know, it's how time flies, right? So next March will be 15 years with HACA. So I'm very excited for the opportunity, very excited for Lisa's new opportunity as well, so to learn from her before she leaves. So I have until the end of October to do that, and I am going to give it my best, and very excited for, like I said, very excited for the opportunity, and excited to work closer with y'all and get to know you. So, thanks,
Laura. We're super excited to have you. Congratulations. As Laura steps into her new role, that creates an opening in admissions, and we're excited that from within the department, Brittley Baker has been at the department for 8 years, 9 years? How long? A long time. 11
Longer
years.
Than
you
me?
You came the same time I did.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So, and Brittley has done a wonderful job as one of the most cheerful, skilled people I know, and we're delighted that she's stepping up as our acting director of admissions. You know, it's been said that admissions is really the lungs of the operation. If that shop doesn't work well, a lot of things that are not good happen. So Brittley's got big responsibilities, and we're excited as she steps up to that as the new acting director of that department. Brittley, want to say a quick word to the board and introduce yourself and anything, any fun facts you want to share?
Hi, I'm Brittley. I'm super excited about this position. Fun fact about me is I am born on leap year. So I've already had, what, 7, 8 birthdays this, my whole life.
Really?
So,
wow.
Yes. But I am super excited. I am going to miss Laura, but she taught me so well, so I hope to continue on her footsteps.
And we have a great, stable team in admissions, so we don't think we'll miss a beat. Thanks for stepping up into admissions. Thank you again, Laura. Thanks. Let me ask Jareen Ryder to step up as well. We have another new member of our management crew. And Gloria, you want to come up too? We're finally rounding out our HR department. Jareen, take a seat. Jareen is stepping up as our new manager for diversity, equity, and inclusion and recruitment. And we're really excited to have her. She's been on board now for, what, about 6 weeks, 8 weeks or so? And has done some impressive work out before coming to HACA with Amazon and other big firms, and we're excited that she's bringing her considerable talents here to the Housing Authority. Jareen, you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Jareen Ryder. I have been in diversity, equity, and inclusion for almost 20 years now. I have a background in education, training, and development. I was a teacher for almost 10 years. In the inner city of Philadelphia. From there, I went to training and development in Amazon and in recruitment. I have primarily served underdeveloped, in impoverished neighborhoods, bringing opportunities to children who didn't have such opportunities throughout their upbringing, showing them that there is life outside of what they see in their six blocks. That was my early career. Then I moved and transitioned into Amazon as a recruiter. And I have been recruiting and doing training and development in diversity, equity, and inclusion. And since I've been here in my 6 weeks, I've attended 3 job fairs. I have done tabling. I've been to Texas Workforce Commission on 2 separate occasions, and also to the Austin Community College to try and bring diverse talent to fill the positions that we have available. We currently, since I've been recruiting, I have seen eight applications that have come through, four interviews, so definitely that does look promising. I've interacted with over 200 people throughout the course of my outings, so to speak, and I'm definitely looking forward to bringing the best talent I can bring here.
Super exciting. Thank you, Jareen. Gloria, anything you want to say? This compliments and adds, fills out our HR function, so we now have
it does. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Yeah. I'm pleased and happy to have Jareen on board with us, and it does fill out our HR department. We finally are a department of three at this time, so having her on board and being able to go out and do recruitment for us is very vital for our agency, and it's very imperative that we have that. In the past, we haven't been able to be out there and have our face and our voice heard in the community. So with Jareen here, she's able to do that, and I'm glad she's jumped in full speed ahead. She's scheduling interviews, she's meeting people, and we're just happy to have her on board.
Thanks so much. Any questions for the board?
I've got just Gloria. You know, right now, DEI is a big political deal. Are y'all seeing any issues out when you go out representing us in that area?
Do I see any issues as far as
people not wanting you to do it?
Given the political climate.
Given the climate of DEI now, definitely I don't see any opposition. It's actually very welcomed, I've noticed, in Austin. People are definitely looking forward to DEI initiatives. DEI isn't just what most people see it as. I went to two events where one was primarily focused to veterans. That's very important. We're in Texas. I live further up in Texas near Fort Hood and Fort Cavazos, essentially, where there's a need for jobs for veterans. So in seeing it coming down here, veterans need jobs, veterans need to be represented. And DEI brings that to the forefront and allows veterans to be represented as well as people from all other walks of life. So it's actually very welcome.
Gloria, what do you think?
What do you think, Gloria?
What do you think?
For us, it hasn't impacted us so much where we had to do away with the program or anything like that, we're very fortunate. So we are actually looking to do DEI training for our staff. That's one of the things that Jareen will be developing for our staff, and do it basically almost every year like we do sexual harassment and other ethics training as well. So we see it as a part of that. I haven't seen a lot of pushback from it. When we discuss it, there are some heads dropped, and people do tend to start looking at their phones instead of wanting to talk about it. And it's a hard issue to talk about. You know, I understand that being a person of color, it is a hard issue for some that are not to understand what has gone on and what's happening, and we have to address it. We have to address it and deal with it here at our agency as well.
Those of us that grew up in government with affirmative action, and, you know, that's just part of life.
Right.
And they're coming down so hard on it, I just wondered if we were catching any of the gruff on the side.
Not at this time.
No, so far so good. I mean, I know state agencies have had their challenges, and actually, you know, we've been a bit sad because some of those state agencies provided resources to other agencies and local governments that we would be able to tap into. But we don't think we're going to miss a beat, and with Jareen here and some of the other work that we've been doing, I think I'm excited about the training. I'm excited about some of the readings we've been doing as an agency and some other things to just, you know, heighten awareness and sensitivity and you know, thinking about everyone and making sure that everyone can participate fairly and equitably. It's important. It's important to do.
Yes.
So,
I agree. All right, thank you.
Thanks, Jareen. Thanks, Gloria. Congratulations to everybody. Let me ask Lupe to come forward because we're going to report out on the citywide advisory board. And while Lupe is coming forward, I'm going to pick on the two UT LBJ school students in the back. Stand up and introduce yourselves and who you are and why you're here.
Hi, I'm Colby Jones.
Chandler Miles.
We're here studying the effects of public participation on our city's policymaking process. We're doing just local public affairs, working on our masters, and we're really excited to be here.
And we hope to work within Austin's graduate.
That's great. That's great. Well, thanks. I'm glad you're here. I was talking earlier with some folks from the LBJ school about the need for us expanding our internship programs to include more young people who are interested in policy and programs and, you know, interested in the both quantitative and qualitative analysis that is so helpful to making programs effective. And we do it well, but I think we, you know, having a pipeline from, you know, the LBJ school is a unique institution in our country and here in Texas. And so I'm glad you guys are here, and we hope to deepen the relationship. Hey, how are you, Lupe?
Good morning.
Lupe Garcia, our president of the Citywide Advisory Board.
Thank you again for having me, everybody. I don't like to give my back, but okay. The Citywide Board meeting was held on September 10th, 2024, at 10:30 a.m. I, Lupe Garcia, Citywide President and President of Santa Rita, call the meeting to order at 10:32. Veronica Castillo-Perez, Citywide Vice President and President of Chalmers, read the minutes from last Citywide Board meeting, which was back in July, because we didn't have a board, an advisory board meeting in August, our board meeting. Treasury report, Citywide Board balance was $2,790.90. Presentations was Mr. Michael Gerber, President and CEO. Congratulations to IMOMS and Santa Rita for the wrap of the Capital Metro bus at 6 p.m. Chalmers West grand opening is on Friday, October the 4th. We're very excited about this event. Invite your family and friends and neighbors, and we'll have breakfast and lunch, and the mayor will attend, among other representatives and community partners. Michael Roth, Vice President of PAMI Red Cafe, will be available for all properties by the beginning of October. Hauka has received 75% online rent payments. Coronado Hills has 87%. For any other properties achieved, it's a 95% registration rate. Mr. Gerber will provide $1,000 to the resident council. Every resident council?
Each resident council.
Good. Okay. Austin Pathways updates. Leilani Viega, Senior Director of Community Development. National Night Out is scheduled on Tuesday, October the 4th, from 4:30 to 8 p.m. across all properties. Please come out and to meet your friendly police officers, firefighters, emergency personnel. Abigail Biddy from Youth Educational Success and Family Self-Sufficient Manager welcomes Brittany Washington as the new Ross Service Coordinator at Meadowbrooks. Murphy Rowland, Work Development Manager. Roy Diaz is the new Goodwill Workforce Coordinator, serving Hakka families. He is based at BTW. Catherine Crago, Digital Inclusion, welcome and introduce the 2024 Fall Austin Community College interns. They are with residents on properties to get signed up for the Rent Cafe and providing troubleshooting assistance. Brahmi Lee, Bringing Home Health. Flu vaccines will be available at Georgia Manor October 28th. Bringing Health Home to team is collaborating with Austin Public Health to bring flu and the new COVID booster shots to Hauka properties. Daniel Rees Home Ownership has four families for the Prospect Heights Home Ownerships Program as Rosewood. I think she meant to say they're in process. Couldn't read. Yeah, thank you. Property updates. Chalmers Veronica Castillo Perez reported that there is a grant for acting workshop beginning in January. Northgate Marta Rivera wanted to request feedback on how to engage more residents. Santa Rita Lupe provided tips and best practice to Northgate on how to increase resident council participations. We're also hosting a town hall meeting with all four mayor candidates October the 8th at 6 p.m. at Southwest Keys. And this is to educate all, inviting all minds and all residents of Hauka properties to attend this meeting. And this is more educational so that they learn how to vote. Since we had a voting program where Travis County came in with the machines, sample of votings, and taught and registered. We registered that night 18 residents from other properties also, including Santa Rita. And this town hall meeting will be almost like a convention, teaching them how and how to listen to what each candidate is going to be doing for our city. So that'll be an educational for all properties. And Lakeside Ramona reported they're busy with National Night Out, an event in October. Meeting adjourned. Veronica Castillo Perez, President of Chalmers, made a motion to adjourn the meeting, and Mayor Postolo, Resident Commissioner, seconded the motion at 11:56.
Any questions?
Any questions?
I deserve lots of big things happening with the grand opening of Chalmers Courts in 2 weeks on October 4th, mm-hmm. and we hope all the board members will attend that, and then National Night Out. It's a big event at each of the properties. And thanks to the citywide leadership and the presidents and vice presidents of each of the resident councils making those events happen at every property.
So we should be having a good event this year.
Yeah. It's going to be busy. It's going to be busy.
Really, really busy. I'm excited about Chalmers.
Great. Any questions for Lupe?
Anything? Anybody?
Thanks so much. Congrats on the bus wrap. We're excited for you.
Yeah. That's good stuff. We got our logo on the Capital Metro bus, y'all.
There you go.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Lupe.
Good evening.
Appreciate you. So before we turn to the business items at hand, I wanted to make one last announcement of the employee of the quarter here at HACA. So excited that for this quarter, we are delighted that Michelle Eastland has been selected as employee of the quarter. She was selected by her peers. Michelle is a longtime team member within technology management innovation. She was actually here when it was MIS, Management Information Systems, and she has been indispensable in helping to make more transitions and migrations and trainings and adoptions of technology happen. She's an instrumental key member for an awful lot of our crew. They really depend on the technology working and understanding how it works. And I just can't say enough nice things about Michelle. But Michelle, come on up. We're so glad and happy for you. I might ask Jorge to say a quick word as director of that department. Put you on the spot.
Like you said, Michelle has been instrumental in all the strategies and all the innovations that we've been doing in the last year and a half. She knows the business better than anyone, on all areas from HR, assisted housing, LIH, everything. So, congratulations, Michelle.
Thank you.
Well deserved.
Well, don't forget those access databases. You know, nobody knows them but Michelle.
Yes, we definitely we keep Michelle well insured. We know they're traveling world alone because if we lose Michelle, the world will hurt. This nifty certificate of appreciation.
Thank you.
And you get a day off. Nice to do. Congrats.
Thank you.
Hey, let's grab the board up for a second. Let's say a quick picture. You jump in the middle and we'll.
Yeah, right here should be perfect.
Awesome.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to count down from 3, 2, 1.
Commissioners, we're going to start with item number one on the consent, which is the only consent item, the presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding approval of the board minutes summary for the board meeting held on August 15th, 2024. Is there any discussion regarding this item, or is there a motion?
So move.
Carrington moves.
Second.
Duncan Hall seconds. Is there any discussion on the item? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
And the ayes have it. On the HACA agenda, we'd like to go to item number 3 first, and I'll ask Lisa and Laura to come forward. This is a presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding resolution 2862, approving the adoption of revised Housing Choice Voucher Program payment standards. And Lisa, if you would take the lead.
Sure. Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Lisa Garcia. I'm the vice president of this
Assisted Housing Department, and I'm here to present resolution number 2862, asking for the adoption and approval of the new payment standard. So each October, there's new fair market rents that are released by HUD, and then we have to take a look at what the current market conditions are and make a decision of how we want to set our payment standards. So we can set them anywhere between 90 and 110%. And reviewing the current payment standards in last year there was a more significant increase. It was about an average 18% increase compared to the previous year. This year, it's just a slight increase. It's about 1 to 2% increase over last year's, depending on the bedroom size. And so my recommendation is to stay, we always want to stay up to date with the market so that families have an opportunity to more successfully locate a place. So my recommendation is to set the payment standards for the Housing Choice Voucher Program at 100% of the published FMRs. And then for a few of the programs, these are specifically programs that serve homeless veterans. We also have the Stability Voucher Program that serves persons experiencing homelessness, and the Emergency Housing Voucher Program as well serves the homeless. HUD allows us to set those at 120% of the published FMRs to allow them greater access to find a place to live. Last year, we did set those at 120%, so I recommend again that we set those for those three programs at 120% of the published FMRs. Additionally, just for your reference, and we handed you a chart out just so you could see, sort of historically speaking, how the payment standards, how they've been set over the years, the last 10 years, so you can just sort of see that Austin, you know, the rising rental rate has been significant over the last 10 years, where in the, for instance, for the efficiency in 2014, we set it at 105%, it was $715, where this year in we're looking at setting it at $1,549. So it's, you know, more than doubled for that particular bedroom size. That's what I have, so I open it up now for any questions that you might have.
But how many are we now serving, and how many do you project will be serving within the next year or two?
So the foster youth to independent, we have a total of 75 of those that we are able to help, and we work with LifeWorks to help them.
Mm-hmm. And is that meeting the need?
No.
There's always a greater need, and so we always look to apply for additional vouchers when they come available. And we did actually apply for an additional 50. It was under the family youth, it's called FUP, or Family Youth to Independent, or it's a Family Unification Program. But under that one, we're able to help the foster youth as well that are aging out of foster care. And we do have a partnership with ECHO as well as LifeWorks, and we're helping them with that. So we did get an additional 50 vouchers this year that go into effect June 1st. And we work with our partners, both with ECHO and then LifeWorks is the main partner that we work with to make sure that they get into, able to receive a voucher. And then we also, there's a property that we're project basing some vouchers at, and we did project base 25 of the foster youth independent vouchers at that property. It's called The Works at Tillery, and that'll be coming online probably, I would say, in the next, I'm just going to say 2 years, but year and a half to 2 years.
LifeWorks has been a major partner of ours in this space, and, mm-hmm. and the Works is one of those. They do provide job training, and I think they provide access or connections with educational programs. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if they offer them themselves, or I think they provide life skills.
Yes, they do. Sure. They do a wide variety of different support services that they have.
What would you consider the projected need that we're not meeting?
A foster youth coming out of certainly higher than what we can serve currently. I'm not in a position to give any real numbers, but it's probably a good question to ask.
It would be a question to ask probably ECHO and LifeWorks to see what they would have that information. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can look and see what the need is. Generally speaking, they can generally do that.
I've just been hearing more and more about this lately, and obviously homelessness is a concern, but when it is the youth coming out of the system and they have no place to go and no support, then I think we all need to be more worried about that.
Absolutely.
Right.
What do we do? What does that program do?
What does it do? It provides them
currently.
It provides them a stable home, and then they get support services from LifeWorks, and they're going to provide a variety of support services depending on the needs of the person. Mm-hmm. So educational support, whatever they might need. You know, each individual is different, and they have a variety of services they're going to provide. So they're going to if they have a tenant-based voucher, they're going to help them with their housing search, coordinating efforts to get security deposit, application fees, and then help them once they get into housing in terms of, you know, housing stability, to provide that ongoing case management to help them be successful in housing once they get into it.
So you've got an 18-year-old kid that's been in the system for 10 years. He grows out of that, of the foster care system, and is basically put out on the street.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like we used to turn out prisoners from the prison and give them $2 and here's a bus ticket.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of like Tara. It's an area that maybe, I don't know that there's anything legally we can do, but is there?
Well, it's an ongoing challenge because the need far exceeds what the available resources are. But let me tell you about a kid, because I know a student who's, you know, got out of foster care, a couple of years ago, did go to LifeWorks, did use one of our vouchers, then went on the same. He got rental support at another property that is a permanent supportive housing property, and got connected to a program called Jails to Jobs, which, because he had a problem with the law, because he didn't have the community support behind him, but is now going through electrical training and has got a job as an electrician apprentice. I think LifeWorks is full of those types of stories, and we're providing the rental subsidy on an awful lot of those young people. But kind of across the board, you know, Lisa has been an advocate, and I have too, and I think our agency is, and Carl as well, for universal vouchers. We should be able to meet people when they have a need and identify with a need and provide them with support, because if we did it then, we could hopefully, you know, bypass, you know, that, you know, the 5-year wait to actually, you know, get a voucher, if you can get a voucher, and then the situation is just so much deeper and more challenging to actually meet people where they are and give them help. Kind of like we did with the eviction prevention program. People came in, they identified a need, we moved $80 million remarkably quick, and we helped like 6,000 people stay stably housed and, you know, get over a difficult period. We need more programs like that.
What about the foster child system? What responsibility do they have turning these 18-year-olds out in the street?
Yeah, respectfully, I mean, I think, you know, I don't want to criticize.
I mean, what kind of, I don't see any support coming from them. I mean, most of the foster the children are victims to begin with. And it seems like we open the door, say bye, and they're victimized again.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's clearly lots of concerns with the foster care system, particularly in Texas. I wouldn't want to, you know, in a public meeting, make any suggestion about how they should improve their work, but clearly there's a lot of work they need to do. We're limited in the assistance that we can provide, but the partner we've got and the work we do, we think is some of the most impactful through ECHO and through LifeWorks. We think we're actually hitting and making a big difference in the lives of those young people. Mm-hmm. And so from that standpoint of one kid at a time, we think we're making, or 75 kids at a time, we're making a difference. From the standpoint of the system problems, that's a bigger issue, as you know.
I just thought I would throw it in.
No, I'm frustrated too. I got you.
But well, I'm not hesitant to say anything in public. The agency doesn't have enough money. They don't have enough people. And the legislature won't give it to them, even when the federal judge tells them to. They're in court right now in Galveston. And I don't know, the federal judge, when we went through the same deal with prisons, he just took over the prison system. Mm-hmm. But Judge Jack doesn't seem to be interested in wanting to do that.
The same approach that is obviously a failing approach.
Yeah, the state's lucky that Judge Justice doesn't have it, because he would have tended to the problem.
Where does LifeWorks funding come from? What are their funding sources? I would imagine it's
I'm
more than
sure.
One.
I have to.
Lots of grants and philanthropic dollars in the community. It's really a wonderful homegrown organization here in Austin. Susan McDowell headed up for about 30 years, and she just retired, and they have a new dynamic leader, but a very skilled group of professionals who know this space well. But they do get a lot of philanthropic dollars. A lot of big foundations do contribute. I think the foster youth issue is a significant one, and one that we may want to dig in deeper to over time. But just to sort of steer us back to the issue at hand today on payment standards, obviously you're seeing increases coming to, you've seen a lot of increases over the last 10 years. And this chart, Lisa did a great job on the chart showing you, giving you a sense of just how much rent has increased. Luckily this year it's a little, not as steep of an increase, but still an increase. And you can see how steep the increases were in 2021, 22, 23. But we're glad that it's not as steep this year, because it means we can stretch those dollars out just a little bit further. Right. Staff still feels that the 100% this year is the right amount to put out as the standard for FMR. And then, the 120%, that's really an area where you all can help a lot of folks in need, because for homeless vets, for people who are struggling with homelessness, who just don't find places easily, the additional 20% of rent capability really can be a game changer for them.
With these increases in FMRs, are we serving fewer people? Are we serving fewer recipients because of these increases? And has HUD increased their dollars as a result of the increase in the payment standards?
Generally not. I mean, the way it works with the funding for the program is your funding each year for the next year is based on what you spent the previous year. So when we get we're always trying to maximize and spend as much as we can without going over the budget authority that HUD provides us. So for next year, they're going to look at how much did we spend in 2024 to give us our 2025 funding. So the answer is, generally speaking, you can help, fewer families, but you want to make sure that you keep your payment standards, in such a way that you're increasing them to be within the market, that you're considering what your reserves are and what your projections are for the next year, so you don't go over. So you don't want to over-inflate them, because then you could be in trouble the next year. So it's a balancing act. So the answer to your question is, the more it costs to house one family results in less people we can house.
We assess.
And then we always have to deal with prorations too. We don't know what those are going to be from year to year. Mm-hmm. They might be 100% proration. That's good. We'll get 100, but some of the years we've gotten 95%. So we might have spent more money and they're only going to give us 95% on that dollar. So it just really depends each year. But yes, generally speaking, we're not able to house up to baseline, and the numbers that we're able to house is generally reduced each year a little bit.
Anything else? Do I have a motion?
So move.
Second.
Thank you,
Mary.
Mary seconds.
Anything else anybody want to talk about other than the Cowboys? All right.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All in for Lisa's last time.
My last one. My last hurrah.
All in favor.
I'm starting all over again.
All in favor, say aye.
Thank you.
Have it.
Appreciate it.
Well, Lisa's here. I was just saying, we'll have a lot of opportunity at the next board meeting, but I think I've shared with all of you, Lisa and I have worked together now 12 years. Doesn't rival her tenure, but I've so enjoyed working with her and her leadership on the national level at Texanaro this year and in so many different ways. She's also a proud graduate of the LBJ school. See, you all, you too can aspire to, but it has been a joy to work with you.
Thank you.
We'll have lots of opportunities to say goodbye over the next month, but.
But we're not saying goodbye.
No, but it'll.
She's still part of the family.
Out of the house, but in the family always, yeah.
Yes, yes, that's right.
Does she, has she been told that it has to be a unanimous vote?
Vote? Any further discussion?
And is there one commissioner who may at least raise a question or two?
Well, I've enjoyed every moment of working here, so I just want to say that, and we'll have more time to visit.
Yes.
But I will always be a part of the family, so thank you all for all your encouragement and support over the years. And
thank you for your contributions.
You're welcome. All right. Thank you all.
Thanks.
Have a Lisa.
All right. We'll move on to the next item.
Okay. Now I think we're going to turn, commissioners, to Ron, you want to go to the Austin Affordable Housing agenda? Or
PFC,
We want to do
the PFC.
Gray and Brad's issue. Let's do that one next. Which one is that? That's
Austin Affordable Housing
Corporation. That's Austin City Lights. Great. So we'll turn to the AAHC agenda and Commissioner Carrington.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber. The meeting of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation has been called to order. A quorum has been certified. Is there any public communication?
No.
No public communication. Then the first item for consideration is the minutes of the board meeting held on August 15th, 2024.
So move. Second.
So move. Chuck moves. Tyra seconds. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you. The first action item is number two, which is the consideration of the bridge at Austin City Lights. And that will be Mr. Kowal.
Thank you, Commissioner Carrington. Good afternoon, Commissioners, Mr. Gerber, staff, guests. Happy to provide to you the opportunity for resolution 0257, which is the opportunity to participate in a partnership with the Christopher Investment Company to acquire or to join what they already own it, but to come in as their general partner and managing member on a 352 unit multifamily complex called Austin City Lights Apartments. This project's located at 501 East Stastny Lane, as you see up there on your map. For a point of reference, just to the east, the project right next to it, if you just right there, is the Agave, which we own with our Belveron partners. And as I go through this a little bit, I just, you know, the synergy there of having Agave, knowing that area very well, and now having, hopefully with your approval, we have some real good synergies to work together as complexes side by side with referrals and help in all kinds of different ways. So excited about that. It's a great location. As you see, it's between on Stastny, between South First and South Congress. Yeah. It's a 300, as I mentioned, it's a 352 unit complex built in 2006. It sits on about 17.91 acres. The average unit size of these are extremely large, which is very attractive as well, exceeding, you know, it's got just a pretty big floor plan. There is 181 bedroom units, 142 bedroom two bath units, and 32 three bedroom two bath units. The Christopher family here has done extensive renovation to this property between 2018 and 2022 with tremendous upgrades to the swimming pools, the interior units, the roofs are brand new. They've added a dog park. They've done just tremendous things, a ton of community outreach within the complex. They've got an incredible rapport with the tenants, which I've got to observe. And for again, for reference, I think we've been working on this for about a year together, putting this together. I've known Brad for many, many years, probably a decade, and from his previous work with the Veritas, company, and now here with the Christopher Investment Company. With that being said, before I go any further, we thought it would be well worthwhile. This is our first partnership together. I wanted you to meet the family and let them tell you a little bit about themselves and share their experiences of Austin and what they've done. And then y'all welcome to ask them any questions.
My name is Greg Christopher. I hope I don't bore you. I talk a lot sometimes. But I was born in Detroit, Michigan. My parents came here from Greece. They were immigrants, and we grew up in subsidized housing in Detroit. And I went to school in Detroit and got my bachelor's degree from Eastern Michigan University. And at that time, the car industry gave very good jobs out to people like the tech industry at a later period of time. And they would also pay for your additional education. So I got my master's while I was working at Chrysler as a superintendent and had about 1,000 employees in a stamping plant where I made quarter panels, doors, fenders for about 15 years. And that got interrupted during the Vietnam War, where everybody at that time had to go to war and then come back. And then when I came back, I simultaneously got in the manufactured housing industry while I was working at Chrysler. And I got into that because in the Detroit area, all the adjacent communities, townships, you could have manufactured housing in certain locations, and it afforded people a very affordable rent, cost to live, and have your families go to really, really good schools, your children go to real good schools. So that was a real plus, and I did that for 33 years. I built every single mobile home park, all the sites, ran them all, managed them, and then I decided after 33 years, I thought there were better opportunities in real estate in Austin instead of Detroit. So I moved our whole team to Austin, me, my CPA and his wife, and my attorney and his wife, my maintenance people, everybody moved to Austin. And we got into shopping centers and apartments simultaneously. And then affordable housing again reared its head when I owned a shopping center in Bee Cave called Shops at the Galleria. And my tenants would often come and complain that they couldn't get anybody to work because it was so expensive for young people to work in the retail business. They couldn't live in that area, though. So I bought the Avante Apartments, which is the back of the shopping center in Bee Cave. They were also built by Trammell Crow, as ACL was. And I gave discounted rents to anybody that was working in the shopping center so our tenants could have an opportunity to have people working there. It was just too expensive and non-affordable. Then I continued on with the apartments and shopping centers and eventually transitioned into all apartments with ACE, the Catherine, which is a high-rise by the Hyatt downtown in 2016. Austin City Lights, the subject that we're talking about today, in 2017. And in 2022, one called The Pearl on 2222 and Koenig. That's 383 units. And one called The Troubadour by the Medical Center on 32nd and Harmon. It's called The Troubadour. So those that is where we are now. I'm real excited about this opportunity with Ron and Suzanne here. We had great working with them. I love the chance. I think we can do great things and provide affordable housing for people because it's really expensive. And, you know, growing up the way I did, I understand it pretty well. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Before you, I got to add, the first time I brought Brad invited me out to tour the property to see if this was an opportunity to meet, to see if it was beneficial and would meet our mission. Mm-hmm. I walked out on the property and there was this man right here walking around with a trash bag, picking up trash, knocking on doors. I've it was just amazing his amount of activity that the family is involved in this property. It's more than just an investment to them. It's their pride. I mean, it's their name, and it really struck with me watching them work. And it is true. His whole team that I got to meet out there all came together. So it's like one big family that's been together for 30 plus years, and their commitment to doing more affordable things was really, really strong that I felt, and I thought this was well worth investigating and furthering, and so here we are 1 year later. But anyway, I just wanted to, it was just amazing to watch the family work out on that property.
Brad, anything you want to share?
I think Greg covered most of it. I think I'd just reiterate what Ron said. You know, we've worked together for 10 years. The first project was Melrose that went into the program, I guess, in 2020 or 2019.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, through that experience and continuing to develop my relationship with Ron, I saw ECL as a great building point for the Christophers as I've started working with them. And you know, I think I want to go back to the point: we hope to grow this business with Ron and Hawkeye to include more communities.
I've got two questions. Why weren't you running the Lions for all those years? The Detroit Lions.
The Detroit Lions. He says, "Were you Detroit Lions?"
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. Like I was until they lost the last week.
Right.
Yes, sir. There's a big sporting town, Detroit, and also famous for Motown Records. If anybody's almost as old as I am.
I am.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you about Motown Records if you're interested. So when I was a young guy.
I was born in Flint, Michigan, by the way, so I kind of know what you're talking about.
So when I was a young guy going to school at Eastern Michigan, I wanted to, the Supremes were a singing group from Detroit, and they were pretty well known at that time. So I went down to Motown Records on West Grand Boulevard, a dumpy little house, and I met this guy, Barry Gordy, and I said, I want to give a concert at my field house with the Supremes. He said, well, we don't do that. We only do Motown reviews. Mm-hmm. And the headliners are the Supremes, Smokey Robinson, or Marvin Gaye. Mm-hmm. And since two of them are busy and only Marvin's available, I'll give you Marvin and the Four Tops and the Temptations and the Marvelettes and the 15-piece bands and all these groups. And we wrote up the contract, and I still got it in my office, and Marvin Gaye made me a little record for advertising, $4,000 for all those groups.
Oh my God.
And that was when they all were just getting started in Detroit, you know. In a little dumpy house where they made the music was a garage floor with plywood on the floor, dirt floor. But they were very good people. They did great.
Honey
Sorry
Bunch,
to get off
Honey
track.
Bunch. You know, that's one of my favorites.
That's question one. What about two?
The Tigers. Now, the Tigers going to make the playoffs. I keep hearing that they're going to get the playoffs this year.
Yeah, well, they run yesterday, so I think they've got a real good chance.
Still hanging in there.
The Tigers, of course, were owned by this one family that sold it to Mr. Monahan that owned Domino's Pizza, founded Domino's Pizza. And Mr. Monahan bought the Tigers. He was a good story, an orphan that was left on the steps of a nun convent in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And he grew into Domino's Pizza. It was quite a story.
I think we could sit around and visit a lot.
Yeah. it's always fun.
All right.
But in the meantime.
I'd like to just add one more thing for you, which I tend to do. Oh, if you want to ask a question, I was going to go over the affordability.
I actually wanted to ask a question on the item. Mm-hmm. We're discussing.
Yeah, that's fine. I was going to share the affordability breakdowns from the lease auto with you, but
that's where I was going.
Okay. So we did the family was gracious enough to allow AMP to come in and do a independent lease audit, which we always acquire to see where we sit on the affordability scale there at the property. And I could, of the 352 units, we were successful in completely going through 283 of those. And so we've still got a few more to go. The lease audits come up with seven of these households are at 30% of AMI, 27 households are at 40% of AMI, 41 households are at 50% of AMI, 43 households are at 60% of AMI, and 82 of the units are at 80% AMI. So that's of the 283 units, 120, that's totals 120.
All right, 60 or below?
I'm sorry, yes. I don't have the total. It's 283 units total, of which, again, seven are at 30, 27 at 40, 41 at 50, 31 at 60, and 15 at 80.
That was what
that's 121 of the units.
And that's not all of the units.
That's not all of the units. Right. There's still about 34% of the units that we're still trying to get more detailed verification. We feel real good. That puts us at about 44% of our target, and I think we'll be well over 50%. I think the good thing is that, you know, in our agreement, we'll be locking these down a guaranteed no less than 10% at 60 and 40% at 80. But as you've heard from the family, they're very committed to do deeper affordability here and maintain what we have and hopefully grow this partnership should we approve today and do more.
May I ask that the numbers that you just gave us on affordability be included in the minutes?
Yes, ma'am.
Secondly, I guess because I was reading the fact that the company is committed to providing 10%, and 10% with, what was it, 94% occupied, I was concerned about when we would ever get to those affordability numbers that I'm looking for. But it seems that we're already there and committed to stay there. Is that correct?
And also, if you do approve this item, and this will close probably mid to, you know, third week of October, somewhere around there, the family's committed, as we always do, is that every unit that comes in is leased affordability first until we reach those numbers. So, I think we'll be there pretty quickly when we finish the audit. So we're real close.
Good.
The schools are fantastic over there. I think I mentioned Pleasant Elementary, Bedecheck Middle School, and Crockett High School. Families also agree. Yeah, obviously, we also require that our voucher holders are accepted there, and that will be an addition to the property as well.
And don't forget, ACC South Campus is there.
That's right.
Austin Community College.
Oh, that's right. They also have agreed to change the name to the Bridge at Austin City Lights, so it will be formally the Bridge. Bellwether's doing the financing for us. We're pretty well down the road on that, at least, you know, pending outcome here. We haven't, you know, haven't sealed the deal yet, but until we get our board approval. But again, we're 94% occupied, and like I said, the property's just fantastic. I'd love for y'all to see it sometime. It's really, really neat.
Are we confident in Bellwether given some of the challenges that we've had? No.
What was that?
I actually talked to Kevin earlier today.
Yeah.
And so this is a Freddie loan that we're replacing with a Freddie Mac loan. So according to Kevin, we should move up the stack to help us through the process and the timing we have.
Yeah, Freddie's been really hit pretty hard backlog. Both GSA, Fannie too, have been, for some reason, an unprecedented backlog. I don't know if it's staffing issues or I don't know if it's just all of a sudden
where
rates have moved a little bit down where people are jumping in and trying to take advantage of although the 10-year's gone up, and since the Fed announced yesterday, the 10-year's gone up probably 10 basis points, but which is interesting. But yeah, I think we'll be fine.
Any other questions?
Yes.
Commissioner Apostolo has.
Mary?
Commissioner Apostolo, do you have a question?
No, I don't. Thank you. I read it.
Okay. Thank you. Maybe I missed it, but is AMP doing the management on this?
No, not on this one. They're doing the compliance, and then they're going to be assisting the family's management, and I'm very comfortable with the way they run their property. The rapport they have with the tenants and the way they've run their property is just impeccable, and there's no reason at this point for us to switch. They have reached out to AMP and asked for assistance in making sure that moving forward, should we approve this item, that AMP continues to assist them in making sure they're doing their files correctly, their affordability correctly. I think they've worked really well together.
Our property manager and assistant property manager on property are all experienced in affordability as well, so I think we have a good team in place.
They had a very good team in place. I'm very confident.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, what this action involves is actually four things. Is to facilitate the acquisition of the bridge at Austin City Lights, to cause AAHC Subsidiary Limited Liability Company to own the development, cause the owner to enter into an acquisition and development financing, and cause AAHC and they're the owner to execute all the documents necessary to complete this transaction.
I move approval.
Tyra moves.
Second.
Mary seconds.
Second.
Any more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Okay, motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Now we go to the Austin Affordable PFC, which is in your book, Austin Affordable PFC. So this meeting has also been called to order. There's been a quorum has been certified. Is there any public comment on the PFC?
No.
Nydia says no. Okay. Then the first item is to approve the consent items, which is the meeting of August the 15th, 2024. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Chuck moves. Tyra seconds. Any discussion? All those in favor? Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay. So the first action, the first and only action item is number two, which is resolution 00117, and it's declaring intent to issue bonds to provide financing for a multifamily residential development known as the, will be known as the Bridge at Treeline. And Suzanne will take this item.
Commissioners, Mr. Gerber, staff, and guests, today, the resolution we are asking for is to just give us permission to apply for bonds in the bond lottery at the end of this year. This doesn't commit us to moving forward. If we do get an allocation, we will be bringing this property back at least two times for your approval. This would be our eighth property with JCI Residential, the third tax credit and bond property. It's located at 12201 Heatherly Drive, which is in South Austin, off of 35, just north of State Highway 45. It's next to our Bridge at Three Hills property, which we purchased with JCI just a couple of months ago, and it's already built. And that one is a workforce housing property. So we feel that these will work very well in conjunction with each other since Bridge at Treeline that I'm presenting today is a tax credit property with deeper affordability. So, since the other one's workforce housing, we can kind of combine on the marketing and send the ones that don't qualify for the tax credit property over there and vice versa. This one is on 11 acres. It is proposed to be 294 family units made up of studios, two bedrooms, one bath. The affordability is right now it's proposed at 117 units at 50% AMI. 65 of those would be at 60% AMI, and 112 of those would be at 70% AMI. And I think that gives us a good range to capture a pretty large audience. This is in the city of Austin, and the schools that would serve this property are Blazier Elementary, Paredes Middle School, and Aikens High School. And we are proposing to go in for an application for $40 million in tax-exempt bonds. And I would be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
And Suzanne, this transaction will come back before the board several times.
At least two times. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll go into, if you approve this resolution today, we'll go into the bond lottery in October, which we'll find out at the beginning of the year whether we get a bond allocation. If we do, then we'll decide from there whether we'll you know, pursue that. And if we do, then we'll come back two more times.
So the first of
the year? Mm-hmm. Yeah, if we get a bond allocation, we'll have a certain amount of months in order. So it'll probably be the beginning of the second quarter that we would come back.
Any more questions? Okay. Tyra moves approval, and is filing the application with the private activity bonds with the Texas Bond Review Board. So Tyra moves.
Second.
Any more discussion?
I do.
All those in favor?
I'm sorry. Did Mary have a question?
Yes.
Did you have a question?
No, I second the move.
Oh, okay. Thank you. All right. So all those in favor? Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay, the motion passes, and that's resolution 00117. So that is the last item for Austin Affordable PFC. So we need to close that meeting. Do I hear a motion that we close the Austin Affordable PFC?
So moved.
Tyra moves. Chuck seconds.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. And so that meeting is closed at 1:25. And I don't think we closed.
This one is also on the AHC board as well for the tax credit application resolution.
Right. We'll go to the PFC though first.
Well, okay. We just did the PFC and closed it. We did. So if we want to go back to AHC, we can do this one and then close it.
Oh, I'm sorry. We just did the PFC?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm off. And now we go back to number three on AAHC.
Right.
And again, this is the same property. This resolution is asking for permission to submit a tax credit application if we get the bond reservation. Again, we will be returning with this item several times.
Okay. Do I hear a motion to approve resolution 00258? Tyra moves.
Second.
Chuck seconds. Mary seconds. All those, any opposed? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. If not, then we will also close the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation meeting at 1:26.
Want to vote on that? To vote on that?
Wait. Oh, yeah. Oh, we need a vote.
Aye.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you all.
You need a motion?
Yeah.
So you need.
Yeah, we did get a motion.
They did.
I moved that it, that was the closing of the
AHC.
AHC. Duncan Hall moved. Commissioner Bailey seconded.
Yeah. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you all. That's. Concludes the business of Austin Affordable Housing Corporation and Austin Affordable PFC.
Commissioners, we'll go back to the HACA agenda. Item number two is presentation, discussion, and possible action on resolution 2861 by the board to take the following actions with regard to the bridge at Austin City Lights, which you just heard. One, acquire the site for the development. Two, lease the development site to the owner of the development. And three, such other actions necessary or convenient to carry out this resolution. I know you all have voted on this now twice, or at least once. Let me ask counsel, is there any other issue the board needs to be aware of?
Yes,
since you're here, I just want to make sure you
get a chance
to ask. I want to make sure it's
blessed. Since you're going to bill us, Bill, we need to ask you a question or two.
Okay.
It's
there a motion in?
I so move.
Carrington moves. Duncan Hall seconds.
Second.
Apostola seconds. Is there any further discussion? All those in support say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
And the motion carries. Last item on the agenda is resolution number 2863, awarding a contract for cybersecurity services to Solis Security. I'm going to ask Jorge to come forward and share with us all the good stuff happening in cybersecurity.
Commissioners, Mr. Gerber, I'm here to ask to approve the award of cybersecurity services contract to Solis Security. Solis Security is our existing vendor, and we did ask to, we went out for proposals. We received 29 proposals, ranging in, you know, costs, approach. But after reviewing all of them, we decided to continue our relationship with the current vendor, with Solis Security. They're familiar with our efforts, with our business, with our staff, and they also offered the best and most more competitive bid. So I'm asking to award the contract for $141,817 annually. Any questions?
This is a big contract, just to add a little additional context. So what you're voting on today is basically $750,000 worth of cybersecurity protection for the agency.
Yeah, 141 didn't sound like much.
No, it's, but over time, it's $750,000.
For what it is.
And it's desperately needed. You know, the cyber risks that we face, the ransom cyber, you know, ransomware that's out there, all the different fraudulent technologies that are being deployed, and other actors. While we're being very aggressive to try to protect our resources and protect our, you know, client information, but that certainly has gotten more challenging as time has gone on. We feel like this is a good middle ground security firm to be able to sort of meet our needs, and has done a pretty good job so far meeting
Correct.
Our needs. And so after quite a bit of discussion and analysis, we feel like Solis can continue to do the job well for the next 5 years. I can't tell you that this won't be the only cybersecurity contract you'll see from us in the next 5 years. We may in fact need additional resources to combat, you know, other bad cyber actors that are out there. But it seems like every year or two, something weird happens that really challenges systems.
This gave us a chance to rework the existing contract. Mm-hmm. We added more features and exercises and services at a lower cost than what we had before. So
this is
sold. Correct.
And how long have we worked
with them? 4 years, I believe. Old. Much longer?
Probably about 9 years.
Okay.
They've changed names. So it wasn't originally Solis that we worked with. There was another company that got bought out. But it's the same
group
that we've worked with for 9 years.
Okay. Correct.
So after that period of time, they should know us very well.
They do. They
correct.
Do.
Yes.
They're the ones that helped us do the NIST compliance last year. Mm-hmm. They were very instrumental in helping us get that for the SACC.
Are there any incidents around the country where other housing authorities have been?
Yes. We've seen, me personally have even helped in the resolution of Seattle Housing Authority, the LA Housing Authority, Denver Housing Authority have all had ransomware attacks where they had Oklahoma City, where they had, you know, their systems compromised. By ransomware, they were down for a significant period of time. So it is something that is, you know, it's happening. We've been lucky that this year, I think, only a couple of, you know, mine or not as big housing authorities have been compromised and not at the same level. But again, we at the same time, we feel that, you know, we have become a target for threat actors, you know, as housing authorities, as an industry. So we're, you know, we're all ramping up our efforts and trying to be more secure. No, I don't think so. So we are, you know, Rent Cafe is a product that is offered by Yardi. That's the software that we use to run our financials, to run our property management. So it's really we're well regarded in all the in all cybersecurity aspects, right? They have all the certifications. They have a huge group behind, you know, covering security for them for all their customers. You know, they're a global company, so they, you know, it, as far as resources, they have better resources than most. But
were there to be some kind of an orchestrated attack through RentCap, it would stop at Yardi. It wouldn't come into our
correct
infect our
correct
system.
Yes,
it doesn't mean we wouldn't have significant issues and problems, but it would that their technology is the firewall,
right?
Yes. But firewalls are only good to a point, and you know, we think it can, you know, in LA, for example, they paid, I think, $3 or $4 million mm-hmm. in ransom to get back their technology. One of the things Jorge and Keith have led is a migration to the cloud.
Correct.
You know, we've, just to be very honest, you know, we're a public agency, so everything's up for, you know, someone could request the documents of the agency anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure even if we were hit that I don't think we would pay ransom because we would still have access. We've done a lot to back up
correct
systems. And I think we would say to folks, and there's because we're a public agency, there can't be any expectation of privacy, although we try hard to maintain private personal identifying
information. Mm-hmm.
But there's limits to it in the event of a ransomware attack or some other kind of attack.
Correct.
So thank goodness we haven't had that yet, but we don't want to have that. So the Solis contract is an important step. Training here of our staff, I should tell you, you know, we've been very aggressive in our last meeting with staff. We run regular drills of staff, mm-hmm. and we've still got the same 25 people who still go and enter their information on the system, and these guys have spam that they basically send out that is designed to attract something that you'd be interested in. So,
correct,
for example, it might look like your benefits, or it might look like some really attractive offer through American Express, or some opportunity to travel, or something exciting. And you know, it's okay to look at it. You can see it.
Correct.
But it's clearly marked. We clearly mark on it external sender, which is the first warning sign that it's from the outside.
Huh?
What
did you say it was marked?
It says external sender on all documents. So external sender. And then it has a link. And it's when people press the link and enter their information. And we still have people doing that. I'm not sure that those people are going to be able to keep working here for much longer. So we basically conveyed that to folks
right
at the last staff meeting.
And this,
we have too many
this,
of those people.
This contract will allow us to get a better system. We're all already deploying it.
Yep.
Get better controls, get better training opportunities, for our staff to, you know, be aware. We're also always trying to keep it on top of their minds, right, that be aware, this is something serious. You don't know when you're going to get hit, so, you know. Every email that you get, make sure that you're reading it, that you're thinking about before taking an action, right? Think about security first, because you don't know when or where you're going to get, may get compromised.
And we encourage all staff to reach out to us if they have a question. Yeah. Before,
about legitimacy.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We're very heavily encouraged. So we're not, yes, we're trying to trap you, but we give them every resource.
And most of the E-team are, we assume that the E-team would be among the first to be hit. You know, our names are most out there, are the ones most prominent. So all the E-team has adopted a posture of, you know, we won't ask staff to do anything electronically. You'll get a phone call from us that says to folks, hey, I'm going to send you an email that details some information I need you to put together on a spreadsheet. But we would never just send a blanket email telling somebody to prepare information or sensitive data or information about payroll or addresses or contact information. We've had a couple of those. We had something sent to HR where somebody was asked to needed all the ACH information for everybody on payroll and under my name and need that ASAP. And, you know, luckily that got stopped very, very quickly. But the person, you know, fell for it. It looks sophisticated, and you know, and it took a few steps before they stopped. So we're asking all staff to be very, very aggressive in stopping this stuff. You know, technology is a curse, right? It's a benefit, a great benefit, and important, but it can be a real curse when it's misused and misapplied. So this lease contract will help us to address some of those issues. And unless there's any other questions, I might suggest voting on this item.
Okay, you've heard the motion, or you haven't heard the motion yet, but you.
That's the move that we approve this lease contract.
Well, wait a minute, the chair's not quite finished.
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
We're now going to. Yeah, that's good enough. Do I have a motion? Yeah, all right, got a motion over here. Do I have a second?
Probably, yes.
Duncan Hall seconds.
Any other discussion? If not, all in favor of item number 4, say aye.
Aye.
Nays, ayes have it. Motion's passed.
Thank you, Commissioners.
I had indicated that I might take you all into executive session, but I don't think I need to. I think I can probably just cover what I need to without going into executive session. But before we do that, I did want to brief you all on a couple of other quick things. Staff reports. Barbara, anything you wanted to share with the board related to finance or this month? And the audit will be, you'll see the audit next month.
Yeah, next month.
Mm-hmm.
So they, give me the draft early next week. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. There are no audit findings, which is good.
No, so far. Uh-huh.
And we will probably invite you all, as we have in the past, to a pre-meeting, you know, where they Laura Ann and Sean and Brian, some combination usually come, and they give us some management things that are useful to know.
I'm quite sure Sean this year she is not going to be able to come because he has good news. They are expecting their, well, kind of fifth kid, the yeah. baby. So it's still, I think it's still on the 2nd of October. So I'm quite sure that he won't be able to make it. He has something more important. But they are going to give us the draft early next week.
Well, he needs to come here and we can tell him how to stop that.
So get excited. We'll probably invite a couple. If I don't know if two of you would like to come, maybe say around 11 o'clock or 10:30, at the next board meeting. Maybe at town. Okay. We'll sync up with.
Yeah, I'll try to get.
Yeah. Well.
I get Tyra and. Well, I'd like for the auditors. You know, the auditors come and they give a quick briefing, more on management issues, things that they see, that they usually don't talk about in the bigger context. You know, the audit. Right. And they usually just share with management, but I think it's been good for, I've appreciated everybody just hearing the same thing. So it gives them a little more time to kind of walk through the audit in more detail. So I'll expect to get an invitation probably to you, and if you'd like to come, I'll include you or
October
or
Carl. 2nd.
I'm sorry?
October 2nd.
No, this would be October.
The board meeting, day, what is the?
The next
October
one.
Is,
yeah.
All right.
Third Thursday.
17th.
Yeah. Yep.
Right? 17th. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great.
And also in the October board meeting, we also going to have the budget for the PBIA red property budget for 2020, calendar year 2025. They are December 31st year end. Okay, so that's the two things for October board meeting.
I wanted Jorge to have just a couple minutes to walk through a couple items related to AI. AI has been a.
Before you do that, can I ask about the October 4th data
challenge?
What time is that?
Yeah, so it's October 4th, and it's going to be, we're going to start at 9:30. I'd like to have all of you there at 9:30, and then all the dignitaries arrive, and showtime is 10 o'clock.
Who are the dignitaries?
We have Mayor Watson coming. We have, probably we will have, I think by the time we're done, I think we'll have half the city council. We'll have Congressman Doggett and Congressman Kassar. So we have both city council, both or congressmen attending, which is great. you know, it had been in Congressman Doggett's district, but then he moved, but he still lives just a few blocks away. And then, so he and we've invited him and Mrs. Doggett to come, and then Greg Kassar is, it is his district, and so we'll, but both congressmen will speak. Still being worked out, Ann is working on where there's parking. We'll let you all know where there is going to be parking. Yeah, we'll have something close in for board members. But it's going to be a bit of a zoo. This one, I should tell you, is going to be bigger than probably all of the others that we've had. It's, you know, we're announcing the completion, not just of Chalmers West and the 158 units there, but we're announcing the completion of the entire neighborhood. So after this, we're done at Chalmers, which is really exciting and joyful. We also picked a day intentionally because that is an in-service day for schools. So the kiddos are out of school. So hopefully it'll be a big family day. You know, that between Chalmers East and Chalmers West is a pathway, a greenway that with a path that is intended for bicycling and places of, you know, coming together and festivals. And so we're going to do the first one, you know, as part of the grand opening. So it's going to be a big, big celebration, big event, and it'll stretch probably till, you know, I would say 9:30 to 11:30 at the earliest, maybe, and stay through lunch. I hope you will stay through lunch and help us to, you know, welcome our elected officials and to share the good word about what we do at HACA. Okay. Yeah, it's exciting. I will say one thing that we've been doing is we've sort of, you know, to rather than let the event, yeah, there's always like lots of other things that happen around these events. We've been very protective of this one. We've wanted to, HACA did this. Our agency did this. This board did this. And so we're going to celebrate that. It's a unique accomplishment in the history of our agency, where we took something that Lyndon Johnson created, and now we've taken it and we've, you know, made it better. And ready for its next iteration. And so we're going to celebrate that. And the community's going to come out and join us for it, which will be exciting. And I'm really glad that there's more than 100 residents who have stayed at more than 100 units at the property, are residents who have, you know, stayed. So we have a huge number of units that are still occupied by the residents who were there originally, and we'll be celebrating them, which has, you know, been great for retention, and, you know, we've really set the bar. It's a high percentage, but I'm not sure what the exact number is.
Definitely 50%.
Yeah, the original property had 150 units there. Now we've got 400, but more than 100%. More than 100 of the apartments are still occupied by original residents.
When did we build it originally?
The original buildings were built in the late 30s.
Well, I started to say, we got people living there that came in the 30s.
No. These are people who were living there prior to the redevelopment of it. Yeah. We wanted to make sure that before the redevelopment, we wanted to make sure that residents stayed. Keeping community together was a real priority of ours. So, yeah, more than 2/3 of the residents who were there 8 years ago have chosen to stay and make it home. And that's exciting.
Are you going to, like, have someone write up this kind of stuff to be able to pass out?
Yep, we're working on it. We've got a couple of folks, and then we've got a marketing person who's helping as well. So it's a big thing.
We all need to walk away with.
Yeah.
These are good facts.
Yep, absolutely. This is a great story for us to tell. So be there on October 4th. Get excited. We're very much looking forward to sharing the day with you. Be there, be square. And you'll get more information coming through me and Nydia in the coming days. I want to let Jorge have just a moment to talk about AI. So.
Yeah, I prepared a couple of slides just to go over pretty much what our initiatives. It's not working. We talked briefly about cybersecurity, everything that we're doing on that space. Just click on it. There you go. I got it. Yeah, so again, we spoke about cybersecurity a little bit ago. and everything that we're doing with Solis, right, to make sure that we're protected. As Mr. Gerber said, we have a lot of personal identifiable information from our residents, and we want to make sure we are safekeeping that, all that information, right? So last year, one of the big efforts that I came to you, to the board to for support on moving our most critical servers up to the cloud, because it provides an additional layer of protection and security. Now we're doing more right in the cybersecurity front. We're developing an incident response plan in case of a ransomware attack or any other cybersecurity attack. An updated disaster recovery plan in case, last year we had the ice storm. We were down for about a week, so we're in a way better position now, but we still need to develop an updated plan, right? So we're also gonna be doing what's called penetration testing, which is we're gonna ask ethical hackers to pretty much attack us and give us the results of that, see how well protected we are, or if there's any gaps in our systems. As I mentioned as well, cybersecurity training for our staff. We're providing videos, we're providing documents, and we're also, creating phishing campaigns to see if they're actually paying attention to our education program. We have updated backup and recovery systems and updated access controls, right? Before, it was a little hard for us to determine who was trying to access from outside. Now we have better controls. Now we can tell, if there's threat actors trying to access our systems, now we can tell and block and be proactive about a response. The next big topic in technology right now, it's AI, artificial intelligence. This is pretty much a computer, giving a computer capabilities to react, to reason and act as if it were a human, right? So I've been working in this area quite a bit. And for us, as it relates to Haka, we have two initiatives that we're working on right now. We identified when we train our employees, right, or when we are property managers, we send them out to the properties to start interacting with our residents. Some of them, we have about 40 documents that are at least 20 pages each in our standard operating procedures. So they may have questions and they need a quick answer. Instead of going through a document, they can, jump on a website, ask the question that they have, and our AI will answer back with our trained data response, right? So that's, and we're thinking of adding the employee handbook, our admin plan, our tenant selection plan, all the HACA data that we have to be able to provide those quick responses to our employees. The second initiative is an AI-powered customer service. So this is a system that we're also developing. This is a separate AI that will assist our residents and pretty much any caller trying to reach us, right, and provide pertinent information without the need of a person, to answer. Yes, ma'am. Yes.
And do you do random checks as you're going along?
Correct. Yes. Yes. And these AIs, we're limiting them just to data that we provide. We're not opening them to the internet, or we're not letting them bring in additional information from outside. So we're limiting. We're instructing it just to do, with our data, making them and training them with our data points. And the extension of this is more probably next year. We can do automation agents, right? So systems that will allow us to do rent reminders to our residents, automated work orders. If something fails, we can pretty much detect and create a work order when it needs to be created. Document gathering when we are, somebody's applying for assistance, and the process that takes the longest is for them to provide us their documents, right? So we can evaluate them easier. With this, we'll allow them to pretty much keep up to date in what they need to be doing in the admissions process. And a lot more, right? There's a lot of other other things that we can be thinking of. But the point is, we want to get in early on this so we can have a say in how do we train these models and how do we develop them, right, for the benefit of HACA.
Do you see this eventually as reducing the number of people that need to be working in these areas?
Not really, but I do see making it more efficient for our employees, right? In theory, yes, we can, you know, we can look at that, you know, but the intent is to make it more efficient for everybody. Right now, we do spend a lot of time doing a lot of manual labor. When an automated system will make it more efficient, right? Make everything more readily available at their fingertips. As I said, questions, resources, processes can be automated. Right now, we have a few processes that we're still doing on Excel spreadsheets. You know, that takes several people, you know, updating one spreadsheet, right, to get the final.
I guess my one concern would be the need for hand holding, what I call high touch.
Yes.
I think that's important for our people to have that.
Correct.
And if we can be efficient in other areas but not lose that part.
Correct. Yes. Yes, ma'am. Yes, this.
Yeah, it's like I called CVS the other day, and you know, you go through, I don't want that, don't want that, don't want that. Well, then, in your words, what do you want? I tell them, sorry, I didn't get that. In your words, what can I do? You know, I said, I need to speak to the pharmacist. Well, they couldn't get that, couldn't they?
Right, right.
And so I don't want any more of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I assume that this is the next technology step above that.
That is correct.
But
it'll be a little more straightforward, and
right.
And remember, we're not getting away with offices. We're not doing away with people. We're going to still have the redundancies, and people can still interface just as they would like, just as they always have. However, many people are telling us, you know, through Rent Cafe. I mean, we're seeing a lot of adoption. It makes things easier for people and for work orders.
For some people,
right. And to be honest, this helps the callers that are actually needing to speak to a person to get there easier, right?
That's what I'm hoping.
Right. We do have, I believe 70% of the callers that we get are looking for just the status of the waitlist, right? How soon are we going to call them? You know, what's their number, pretty much? That's something that we can automate easily, you know, and. Because for an agent, just to get to that information usually takes them about 5 to 7 minutes, right? We can provide that information within the first 30 seconds. So.
Great.
Yep.
So more to learn about AI, but coming soon to a housing authority near you.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yep.
Thanks, Jorge. Appreciate it. Last thing I want to share is just by way of staff reports, obviously you've heard about October 4th. You saw some new faces at the very beginning of the board meeting, which is good. Lisa's departure is a big one. I mean, losing 30 years of experience is tough. There's another person in her.
How large is her operation?
50 people and $90 million. It's a lot. It's a big operation. And then there's another person in her shop, Diane Falcone, who has been there also 30 years. And she's retiring at the end of January. So we've got some transition happening. So a lot of work is going into. Barbara's going to be working with the division as well. Sylvia will be working on matters with the division as well. And she has a lot of experience, not only in Section 8, but also in admissions. So we won't miss a beat. But they'll be as with any transition, and I'm grateful to Lisa. There's a little longer transition. You know, it was about 6 weeks as opposed to the traditional two, which I'm grateful, but it's a great opportunity for her that she's wanted, and but it's going to be a bit of a, we'll hit some bumps along the way, and I just want to, I don't know that you all will hear them or see them, but in the interest of transparency, it's just working through the hard stuff of managing, and so, but just a heads up that we're having a moment, and and we're just working through it. So, But that's about all I've got to report to y'all. A lot of good stuff covered today. Some of us will be at National NARO next week in Orlando. I'll be there. Lisa will be there, and Carl will be there. So we'll fill you in on that when we when we're back. Yeah, I appreciate y'all coming out today.
Now, is Sylvia going to be there as well?
Sylvia won't be. Sylvia won't be at National NARO, but she does return next. She'll be back on Monday. She was in Spain for 2 weeks.
I know.
This is really.
I'm anxious to hear about it since I made all my recommendations.
That I can't repeat. Get rid of.
Well, I sent her a note earlier. I said that while you're on your umpteenth paella and your however much many gallons of sangria, don't be thinking about us at today's board meeting. So she's not yet responded. So.
Okay, I need a motion to.
Duncan Holmes and Apostol. Mary, do you second?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Smile when you say that, Mary.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
We're good.
Thank y'all. Take care, Mary. We're thinking about you.
Take care. Good seeing you.
Okay. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Come in or don't come at all, don't come.